This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
War, vengeance, and wrath were the Homeric themes that dominated classical Greece, a society that reached unprecedented cultural and intellectual heights while almost destroying itself in a vicious, violent war. Jim Linden joins me live in studio. He is a professor in the Department of History at the University of Virginia. His new book is Song of Wrath, The Peloponnesian War Begins. It's an honor to have you here. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Now, as I understand it, the significance of this is a series of battles in 5th century BC, battles and wars that collectively we refer to as the Peloponnesian Wars, really heralds the fall of the Greek Empire. Is that right?
Well, it heralds the fall of the Athenian Empire, which is the period of Greek history that we think about as the most glorious and the most culturally productive and the richest. This is when the Parthenon was built and the great tragedians did their work and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yes. And it was these the various city-states, the Spartans attacked the Athenians and brought down the Athenians, and power just sort of went off in a whole bunch of different directions. Is that right?
Yes. Once the war is over, Greece is exhausted. The population is much lower. It's much poorer. And this makes it vulnerable to eventual conquest by the Macedonians, by the father of Alexander the Great, who, of course, then himself goes on to conquer all of the East.
Yeah. And that's a fascinating part of this, is the Peloponnesian Wars and the fall of Athenian Greece is really the introduction to the next great empire, of Alexander the Great. It really is fascinating. Where's the title come from, Jim? Song of Wrath?
Yeah, the title comes from the first line of the Iliad. Sing goddess the wrath of Peleus' son Achilles, which brought woes a thousandfold upon the Achaeans. I gave the book that title because the theme of the book is the force of anger and the force of revenge in human history, in people getting into wars, and not only getting into wars, but in how they conduct wars. People want revenge in war and go and look for it.
Yeah. We're talking with Jim Linden, a professor of history at the University of Virginia. His new book is Song of Wrath, a beautiful new book about the fall of the Athenian Empire in Greece. And in 5th century BC, so this is way back. And this is happening just as Rome is coming online, just as the Roman Empire is really starting to take off, right?
Yes, although Rome becomes powerful considerably later. Rome is already there. It's still a relatively minor power in Italy. It's sort of gathering its strength to become a great world empire in this period.
Yeah. Now tell me what you learned doing this, because a lot of people think, well, you know, Thucydides, he told the story of the wars and we were done. History was done. But you really did a terrific job exploring this from fresh angles and uncovered a lot of stuff. Share with us, just take a moment to share with us some of the things that you learned as a historian who's been studying this stuff for years.
Well, every time you read Thucydides, you learn more stuff. Because that's the thing about great books. Great books, every time you go back to them with new questions, they give you new answers. And I, having been reading Thucydides since the age of 17, didn't really believe that there was much more there for me. But in fact, I was quite wrong. Thucydides remains rich, and every time you read him, you learn more than you learned before. Thucydides is not only the founder of, in some sense, what we would call history, but also of political science. He's an enormously important creator of ethics, a philosopher. All these things that he does are totally amazing. And every time you dip into him, you come back a wiser person.
Yeah. So what was there that you saw with more mature eyes and a more learned scholarship that you didn't see when you were a teenager?
Well, You're taught that Thucydides is the founder of realism, right? The conception that relations between states are a question of fear of power. And this is, of course, a very important theory in international relations now. If you go to the Department of Politics here at UVA, you'll find all sorts of good people who work on realism. But what I found is that that's only part of Thucydides' story, that he is, in fact, incredibly interested in the honor of states, in insult, states insulting each other, defending their honor, taking revenge on each other. And as his book goes on, he becomes less interested in realism, the fear of power, and more interested in those more, as it were, humanistic aspects of the relationship between states.
Yeah. Which means what? Like the personalities between the leaders or something?
Well, not so much the personalities between the leaders, but the way in which states regard themselves as ranked against each other in a sort of cumulative honor, as if one had more money than the other. And the way in which they fight each other to get supremacy in that rank between each other.
Yeah,
that is what they want to do. That is why the war happens. And that is why they behave like they do in the course of the war.
So one of the most fascinating things about this for me personally is, and I would imagine for you, I don't want to speak for you, but it is not just the, isn't this interesting ancient Greece and the fall of Athenian Greece, the fall of the, arguably the first great empire of the world. That's what you're writing about. But the lessons we learn about what it tells us about today, about nation states today and how empires work in today's world in the 21st century. So tell us what the Peloponnesian Wars and the fall of ancient Greece has to tell us about today.
Well, in the news today, this morning, we learned that an important Iranian general has threatened to arrange the killing of American generals in revenge for the killing of the Iranian nuclear scientist a couple of weeks ago. And it's that sort of behavior which remains in the world and which this type of analysis, my understanding of the Peloponnesian War, helps us to understand. Things like...
The very same dynamic is there thousands of years ago.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
The same sort of... And you know, the behavior of states like North Korea bombing or shelling that town in South Korea recently. These are states which regard the world, don't regard nations as equals, but regard them instead as being in a rank order from top to bottom, and they are desperately anxious to protect their rank and to advance their rank. And they do so by attacking other people, insulting other people, and particularly they defend their rank by taking violent revenge when they feel that that rank has been disturbed in some way.
We're talking with Jim Linden of the University of Virginia's Corcoran Department of History. His new book is Song of Wrath. The Peloponnesian War begins back in 5th century BC when the world's first great empire was brought to its knees by terrorist rebels. I mean, what were the Spartans? Were they the terrorist rebels of the day, or were they?
No, the Spartans are the old leading power. The Spartans would now be the equivalent of the United States faced by a rising power, which we might regard as equivalent to China. The Athenians are the newcomers, and they want to be respected. And the Spartans say, no, we are the top of the heap. We do not propose to give you the respect you want. The Athenians say, you must. And the result is eventually a war in which the Athenians win. That is to say, the part of the whole story I'm talking about is the first 10 years of the Peloponnesian War. And the Athenians win that part and make the Spartans admit that they are, in fact, their equals.
Interesting. But then they later lose, of course.
Yes. Then the war recommences because the Athenians foolishly allow it to do so, and the power of Athens is destroyed.
So we're brought up in America today with this sense of awe for ancient Greece. And when we say ancient Greece, of course, we're talking about the Athenians. I guess the Spartans didn't share in that awe, or did they?
No. The Spartans believe that they are better men, that they are braver. They are completely uninterested in Athenian cultural achievement, in the Parthenon, in the plays, and that sort of thing. The Spartans are very Spartan. They are warriors, and they don't care. about what the Athenians pride themselves on. This is one of the problems, that if you ask the Athenians, why do you think you're equal to Sparta? An Athenian will say, we dominate all these other cities. We have this great art. We have this great theater. And then if you ask a Spartan, well, why don't you admit this? The Spartans will say, they're just not as brave as us. We just don't care about all this other stuff. We rank higher. We have the right to pride because we are better men.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I remember reading somewhere in Edward Said this idea that every empire just thinks of itself as the very best in human history, and that when it wages war, it's all about bringing freedom to the rest of the world and better opportunities, because it looks at itself as the very best. So when it's fighting somebody else, it's not really about controlling resources and getting land and dominating. It really is about, well, don't you just get it? We're the best. So you have to do what we do. And if it takes a gun or a spear to get you to do that, that's what we're going to do.
And both sides in this war fight what they would argue are wars of liberation. The Spartans want to liberate people from the Athenians. The Athenians want to liberate themselves from, and of course their allies, from what they regard as a humiliating subordination to the Spartans. Yeah. So you're absolutely right. Everyone always does think that.
Yeah. The new book is Song of Wrath, The Beginning of the Peloponnesian War, The Fall of the World's First Great Empire, the classical Athenian Greece in 5th century BC. We're talking with Jim Linden of the University of Virginia's Corcoran Department of History. I'm curious, before we let you go, I'm trying to get a grasp of what these people really like. Rituals, warfare. Give us a sense of how they actually lived. This is a long time ago. Some of this sounds so familiar to the headlines today, and yet this was a very different world.
Well, they live a very dirty and impoverished existence by our standard. This is one of the things that makes their cultural achievements so amazing. It's not difficult for us, of course, to, you know, give money to the Metropolitan Opera, to the Paramount Theater, all that type of thing, because we live in an immensely rich world. They lived in an incredibly poor one, and therefore all their achievements in war, in culture, and so forth, are extraordinary simply because the world had so many fewer resources. In some sense, Athenian tragedy and things like that can only arise if a lot of people go hungry. And they accepted that and accepted the sacrifices that they needed. They accepted that if they fought a war like the Peloponnesian War, they might lose somewhere between half and a third of their population. Their population, not just their soldiers, but their population, which is what the Athenians lose in the course of the Peloponnesian War.
Holy cow. Wow. So there really was a sense, too, and culturally, that the mere fact that they could build a theater and put on a series of plays, whether they were good or not, and of course they're amazing, but that accomplishment in and of itself, given what was going on in the world at the time and the lack of food and shelter and all of this, is just staggering.
It's much more impressive even than there are, for example, going to the moon. Going to the moon cost us not a tiny, you know, nowhere near as much as putting on a series of tragedies and conducting a major religious festival around those tragedies, which they do, would have cost the Athenians.
Yeah. So I'm curious, where are you going next? What's on the back burner that you are looking forward to working on?
I'm going back to Rome. I'm looking forward to writing about Roman education, but not because I'm interested in Roman education, but because I want to look at what Roman education, which is almost entirely about rhetoric, it's public speaking.
Yeah.
Everyone has this education, and that's the only education they have, and then they have to go out and govern an empire. And I want to figure out what happens to your mind on rhetoric, and what happens to you if you then go out and attempt to govern with this very narrow and, to us, very weird education.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't a liberal education. It was
Well, it's sort of liberal in the sense that you learn a certain amount of it's basically like a world of English majors.
Yeah, yeah.
and there's no economics. There's no math. There's no practically anything else. Very few Romans could probably do division and multiplication. All you learn is to speak, and and the ancillary stuff that you need to know to speak, which is a little bit of philosophy so you can throw some stuff in,
yeah.
A little bit of history so you can throw some stuff in. You don't learn either of those systematically, just enough so you have enough stuff to throw in.
Yeah, that's amazing. I remember reading in college, because I studied Latin, about the cursus honororum, the path of honor, and that this was the curriculum for the learned young man who would one day lead an empire.
Yes, and you get up that cursus in large part by your ability to do public speaking. That's what you learn in school, and that's what then people want to see when they decide whether you should become the governor of some distant and cold place full of barbarians. They decide on the basis of who's the best public speaker.
Isn't that amazing?
This strikes us as totally amazing, just as you say.
And it's also striking to point out that thousands of years later, when Thomas Jefferson was growing up as a kid, that was still so incredibly prized, with this ability to command a crowd, command an audience into the 20th century. I mean, you could argue it's still important today, although less so. But what's striking about Jefferson is that he figured out a way to become a leader, even though he was a horrible public speaker and hated it. He figured out writing was one way he was going to do it, and it was sort of a new path of honor.
That's absolutely right. The thing about Jefferson is how incredibly and almost uniquely well-educated he was. He knew everything there was to know in his generation, which is much closer to everything there is to know now than a Roman would, who wouldn't know everything that there was to know, simply because a Roman is expected to master only about 1% of everything there is to know incredibly well. And on the basis of that very arbitrarily chosen 1%, go out and try to rule his empire.
Yeah. Jim Lyndon is a professor of history in the University of Virginia's Corcoran Department of History. His new book is Song of Wrath: The Peloponnesian War Begins, about the fall of the world's first great empire, Athenian Greece. It's a beautiful book. Jim, thank you so much for being here. I've really enjoyed it.
It's been an honor. Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.